You will hear a conversation between two friends arranging a holiday. First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 4. You will see that there is an example that has been done for you. On this occasion only, the conversation relating to this will be played first.
Hi, Mike. It's Julie. Listen, I know you're really busy, but we need to book our travel insurance. We're leaving in a couple of days, after all.
Yeah, sure. I'm on my lunch break, so go ahead.
The answer is on his lunch break, so A has been chosen. Now we shall begin. You should answer the questions as you listen, because you will not hear the recording a second time. Listen carefully and answer questions 1 to 4.
Hi, Mike. It's Julie. Listen, I know you're really busy, but we need to book our travel insurance. We're leaving in a couple of days, after all.
Yeah, sure. I'm on my lunch break, so go ahead.
Okay. Well, my first question is, what type of insurance do we need? I wasn't sure which to choose. Do we want the bronze, silver, gold, or platinum type of policy?
What's the difference?
Well, the first only covers medical expenses. The second covers medical and our baggage, and the gold, all of that, plus cancellation, and the platinum covers everything, including legal expenses.
Okay, well, if we're travelling in 2 days' time, we don't really need the cancellation policy, do we? What do you think?
Well, personally, the only thing that's really necessary is the medical cover.
Yeah, but would you think that if you had everything stolen?
Yeah, maybe you're right. Let's get the gold.
Sorry, don't you mean the silver? I thought we agreed that we don't need the cancellation cover.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Silver it is.
So, how much is that going to cost us?
Well, there are two of us, so let's see. It's £25 for single cover and £40 for a group of up to 3 people.
But there are only 2 of us.
I know, but it's still cheaper than doing 2 individual policies. That would cost £50.
Okay, group cover it is.
Right. Now, how are we going to pay? If we pay by debit card, there'll be a 5% discount. But I only have a credit card, and there's a 2.5% charge for that. They don't have an office in central London, so we can't pay by cash.
Oh, really? What a pain.
Okay, well, I'll just have to use my credit card then.
Oh, great. That's sorted then. What else is there?
Well, you know that new expensive camera you bought and you were hoping to take some great pictures with?
Yes.
Well, the policy only covers equipment up to the value of £200. And didn't you say it cost £1,000?
No, I bought it for $1,000.
Yeah, but that's still more than £200, isn't it?
Well, at the time that was around £500, but it's worth less than that now. Maybe only £300.
So to cover it, you'd need to pay extra.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 5 to 10. Now listen and answer questions 5 to 10.
I just need to check your personal details to complete this online form, and then we'll be sorted.
Okay. What do you need to know?
Firstly, I need to make sure I've got your full name. It's Mike Wood, right?
Yep.
Right. Next, I need your address.
Ah, it's 17 Hanley Gardens. Hanley spelled H-A-N-L-E-Y.
Just writing that down. 17 Hanley Street.
No, Gardens.
Oops, my mistake. Okay, what's your date of birth?
That's 23/07/70.
Right. So now I need an emergency contact number. It's your mobile, right?
Yes, it's 0793-245-098.
Was that 089?
No, 098. Anything else?
Well, they need the main policy holder. Who would that be?
I think that would be you, since you're paying for it with your card.
Of course. So I just type in Julie Bennett. Hang on, just typing B-E-N-N-E-T-T. Okay, we're just about done. All I need to do is enter the dates of departure and return.
Well, we leave on Friday, which is the 16th.
No, it isn't. It'll be the 17th.
Are you sure? Let me check my calendar. Oh, yes, the 17th.
Right. So, Friday the 17th of July, and returning on Friday the 31st.
Hang on. If we fly out on Friday the 31st in the evening, it'll be the morning of Saturday the 1st by the time we get back, with the time difference. We don't want our policy to run out before we land now, do we?
No, we don't. Okay, so return date is Saturday the 1st of August. Okay, my goodness, that certainly took longer than I expected it to. I hope our trip is worth it.
Trust me, Julie, you'll love it there. Especially as you'll have your own personal guide.
Yes, okay. See you in a couple of days then. Bye.
See ya.
That is the end of section one. You now have half a minute to check your answers. Section 2. You will hear a tour guide taking people around the Sydney Observatory. First, you have some time to look at questions 11 to 15. Now listen and answer questions 11 to 15.
Could I have your attention, please? Gather round, gather round. My name is Patricia, and I'll be your guide around the Sydney Observatory. Now, as you all will know, man has been interested in the night sky for a very long time. Indeed, before the invention of the compass, it was used by sailors to navigate their way across the world's oceans. A kind of star map, you could say. Now, the site of the museum on Observatory Hill has its own interesting story. Before the colonisers arrived, it belonged to the Cadigal people, who may have even viewed the arrival of the new visitors from here, as this is the highest natural point in Sydney Harbour. The early Europeans then built a windmill on the site, though it didn't last for long due to its exposed position. A little while after that, the land was used to build a fort, which was to finally become the observatory that you see before you today. Now, let's take a look inside. To the left of the main entrance is the cloakroom, where you can leave your coats and bags. But please make sure you don't leave any mobiles or valuables, as staff cannot be held responsible. The museum is open during the day until 5 p.m, so please collect belongings no later than 5:15, and please vacate the building by 5:30. No new admissions will be allowed after 4:30 p.m. After you've left your personal items, you'll need to buy your tickets from the ticket desk immediately behind you before continuing on the rest of the tour. The normal price is $8 for an adult and $6 for a child, though groups of up to 4 people can save money by buying a family ticket. This must contain at least 1 adult and 1 child, but no more than 2 children per adult. I'll wait for you on the other side of the ticket barrier by the coffee shop while you all get your ticket.
Before you hear the rest of the tour, you have some time to look at questions 16 to 20. Now listen and answer questions 16 to 20.
So, I hope you enjoyed the tour. But before I leave you, I just want to draw your attention to one more thing. Your observatory ticket also entitles you to visit another of Sydney's famous sites at a 50% discount. You'll find lots on to keep the children entertained. For example, they've got sound workshops where you can have a go at being a DJ. This is called the Sound House, and you'll find it up on the 2nd floor, just after the kids' playground. Look for signs for the Vector Lab workshops if you get lost. For those of you interested in fashion and design, the Lace Study Centre should not be missed. You'll get the chance to look at one of the country's best collections all in one place. However, like most museums, only a fraction of their collections are actually on display. But in the museum's unique Discovery Centre, you can take the opportunity to go behind the scenes and see parts of the collection that are not on display. All of these attractions can be found under one roof at Sydney's famous Powerhouse Museum. I do hope you are able to go and enjoy the experience. You won't be disappointed.
That is the end of Section 2. You now have half a minute to check your answers. Section 3. You will hear 2 psychology students talking about an essay. First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 26. Now listen carefully and answer questions 21 to 26.
Hey, Simon. You look down. How are you getting on with your essay for Professor Jones?
Not very well, I'm afraid. I can't seem to get my head around it. I mean, it's such a wide topic that I really haven't got a clue where to start.
Oh, poor you. I'm actually free now, so I can give you a hand if you like. You have until the end of this week, don't you?
Yeah, I have to hand the essay in on Friday afternoon. But the professor wants to see my proposal on Wednesday morning.
Today is Tuesday, so that's tomorrow. You had better get a move on. Let's have a look.
Thanks. I'm just trying to brainstorm some ideas, but I haven't got very far.
Let me see. Well, firstly, I think that writing your ideas in a list like that really isn't going to help. Remember how we were taught to do spidergrams at the beginning of the year?
Diagrams?
No, not diagrams. Spidergrams. It's supposed to mimic the way our brains process information, rather than simply expecting them to come out in some kind of logical order. They're also sometimes called spider graphs because of how they look. Like a spider.
Okay, I'll start over again.
Right. Now, our essay is on people's motivation for participating in extreme sports. There are two sides to this, really. The external and internal influences.
Right. So let's look at the external influences first of all.
So what kind of things make people want to do extreme sports?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is the amount of media attention on the topic. There are always stories about people taking part in the latest craze.
Exactly. Now, let's think about this more carefully. Why does so much appear in the media?
I don't know. I've never really thought about it.
Well, according to the published materials out there, it's a reflection of modern culture.
Of course. Yes, you're right.
Now, what about the factors that come from within the person?
I suppose the most obvious thing to say is the adrenaline rush.
Right. But what else?
People would want to test their limits, which is a psychological need that all humans have.
And there's one more thing that we haven't added yet.
What's that?
What all animals do naturally. Compete, of course.
Right. It's the element of competition that drives all things to be the best. Now, why didn't I think of that before?
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 27 to 30. Now listen and answer questions 27 to 30.
How much background reading have you done on the topic?
Actually, none at all. It's really bad, isn't it? But I just haven't had the time with my part-time job.
I know what you mean. But honestly, it's so much easier once you've read around the topic a bit. Did you get a copy of the suggested sources? Because if not, I've got one here.
No, I didn't. Thanks. That's a great help.
I tell you what. You write down the main points and I'll read it out.
Okay, go for it.
The first one's by a guy called Hans German and it's called Crossing Borders. It's a research project that was carried out on around 200 participants of extreme sports. It's a really interesting read.
Okay, what next?
The next book was written by a man called Richard Bell and is called Motivation Theories. It gives an overview of thrill-seeking and why people choose to put their lives in danger.
Is it long?
Yeah, it's quite weighty. Why?
It's just I really don't have very long before the essay needs to be in. So, is there anything on there that would help me more quickly?
Well, I did find a podcast on the topic. I didn't write down the author's name, but they are called The Mind Files. And it's also about the theories and principles, but obviously doesn't go into as much detail as in a book.
That's absolutely fantastic, Therese. How can I ever repay you?
Oh, I don't know. A coffee, maybe?
Of course. My treat.
That is the end of section 3. You now have half a minute to check your answers. Section 4. You will hear part of a lecture about conserving natural resources. First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 40. Now listen carefully and answer questions 31 to 40.
Shall we start? Right, now, where did we get to last week? Ah, that's right. We were going to begin with a look at three of the world's most pressing problems, what has caused them, as well as looking at some of the many possible solutions. Top of the list is air, water and soil pollution. With an ever-increasing demand for food came the increased use of chemical pesticides during the late 1960s. Now, some of you may say that this isn't the ultimate root of the problem. Overpopulation is. But you would be missing out a very important step. The increase in population didn't in itself lead to the pollution of the air, water, and soil. What caused the problem in the first place was a move away from traditional farming methods, thanks to advances in technology. Ironically, the answer comes from past farming practices. Well, thankfully, the revolution has already begun. Organic farming and a respect for nature's cycles is the key to solving the problem. In second place, though inextricably linked to the first issue, is the problem of the natural resource depletion. By that, I mean not only fossil fuels, such as oil, coal, and gas, but things we all too often take for granted, like fresh water and essential trace minerals in good quality soil. The main culprit, or guilty party here, is wasteful past management practices from those in power. Even though we knew that there were only finite supplies of traditional energy sources, we behaved like we didn't. The phrase that springs to mind is, ignorance is bliss. But what about a solution? Again, the process has already begun. We need to invest in new, less polluting technologies in our vehicles, which will also help with the first problem, and use more hydrogen technology. That is, produce car engines that run on water. That's the way forward here. Not good drinking water, of course, but saline water, which is in abundance. Finally, we come to the last problem, that of unequal wealth distribution. Every year, more and more land on the planet is owned by fewer and fewer people, which is in direct contrast to the world's growing population. And the reason for this? Quite simply, the greed and corruption of those in power, I'm afraid. The only way to solve this one, and it's a biggie, is for the countries of the world to work together in solidarity rather than against each other in isolation. Now, although the solutions I have presented are viable, it doesn't mean that they're without their own potential problems. Firstly, making these kinds of changes is going to be expensive in the short term as we invest in the research and development of new technologies. Secondly, there's also the issue of popularity. It's the politicians of the world who need to make these changes. But they also need to keep their voters happy and may be reluctant to bring in new practices that may prove unpopular among voters at election time. But the biggest and most important challenge is making the world's monetary system fairer by making things more equal and balanced for all. This includes adopting ecological practices that benefit all, not just a company's profit sheet. We need to begin an age of corporate social responsibility. Only then can we truly move forward.
That is the end of section 4. You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Thank you.